she did allow me to be a mother. And not just a mother. I think she really allowed me to be a great mother. She allowed me to be the mother that I knew that I am and that I was, and that was attempted to be taken from me.
Dog people, welcome back to Rescued by a Dog, the podcast about dogs that have actually saved their owners' lives. I am Laura, host of the podcast. If you enjoy these stories as much as I do, I'd love your help. Can you give $5 to help keep Rescued by a Dog going? There are two easy ways to do this. First, you could just Venmo me $5 or whatever amount you want to send at the handle Laura Bama. That's L-A-U-R-A, B as in boy, A, M as in mother, A. Or you can go to patreon.com/rescuedbyadogpodcast. Again, that's Patreon, spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. So patreon.com/rescuedbyadogpodcast. When you join the Rescued by a Dog community on Patreon, your $5 a month will help me to continue sharing these beautiful, uplifting stories. Today, we're going to hear from Emiko. When she suffered a stroke after losing custody of her child, a sick, neglected shelter pup named Victoria reminded Emiko that she's an amazing mother. Hello?
Hello. Hold on. Where's my video? There's my video.
Hi.
Hi.
Is it Emiko? Did I say it right?
Emiko, yeah.
Emiko, got it. Hi, so nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you. Thank you for just thank you. Just thank you.
Okay, so why don't we start out with you telling me the name of the dog we're going to talk about today and what the dog looked like?
Our dog's name was Victoria. And if you ask my son, he would say that her name was Victoria Michaela, because he originally wanted the dog to be named Mike, but we got a female dog, so we went with Michaela, so Victoria Michaela. And she was described as a standard American bulldog at the shelter, which I think is a fancy way of saying pit bull. And I have, that's...
Oh my gosh, Victoria. She's so cute. How much did she weigh?
At her healthiest, she was probably about 55 or 60 pounds.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about what was going on in your life just before you met Victoria?
I had been going through a tremendously high tension, high animosity, really remarkable custody battle. Cross-jurisdictional, interstate, cross-country. And it had been going on for the better part of 5, maybe 6 years at that time. And my child and I were separated, not by choice, and frankly, not by merit, if I and a bunch of other people do say so ourselves. The way that it was structured was that I had to fly back to sort of where the court was for litigation. The judge was not allowing me to appear via, you know, whatever court link or something. So I was flying back, if not every couple of weeks, every week to New York City. And it was grueling. And eventually what ended up happening after 5 years of this compounded stress and trauma was that I had a stroke. I was 39 years old. I had no idea what was happening. And that happened right before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. It was literally maybe a month before the pandemic really started to descend upon the US. And so my doctor said, full life change. So you're not cleared to fly because of the stroke. And then obviously with the pandemic, I couldn't fly anyway. By that time, we were in the appeals process. The case actually was so remarkable and so bizarre that it made a number of major press outlets, including the New York Law Journal, because it was so unprecedented. So what ended up happening at the time was that custody was ruled in favor of my ex, sole and full custody, and to a remarkable ending that the what would normally be considered non-custodial parenting time, right, i.e. old school visitation, was so severely strictly limited. It was limited to the island of Manhattan. It was, there's a whole host of things that probably are for a different podcast, not for yours. And so what ended up happening was there was no way to amend or augment it or change it because of the pandemic. And they didn't seem to have much care for the, well, I'm not surprised now looking back on it. They didn't seem to have much care for the fact that I had a very serious medical happening. They just sort of were like, yeah, meh, well, who cares, whatever.
So where were you living at the time?
I was in California, in Southern California, where I am now.
And so given that you couldn't travel and visitation was limited, does that mean there was a period of time where you could not see your child?
To date, I have not seen him since January of 2020. And I will say this, not for lack of making repeated efforts to make that happen. So my doctor said, you need to find something that will heal you. And she said, what about a dog? Go rescue a dog. It'll give you something to do. And so that's what was going on. And we had applied at a few rescues. We were accepted for all of them. But for whatever reason, they kept falling through. One had pneumonia, one had something else, one, you know, and so we were sort of like, ah, this isn't working. And finally, on Valentine's Day of 2020, we were out to dinner and I said to my partner at the time, I said, I think we need to go to a shelter. And I think we need to just get a dog. And so the next day, after doing a little bit of research, we ended up at the Los Angeles County Carson Animal Control Shelter. And I mean, we got up at 5:30 to get there by 6:30. And there was already a line of people outside. And I went to take a number. And this this little girl, she must have been 7 or 8, and her mother jumped in front of me in line. And I knew that puppy was no longer ours. I knew it. And the little girl, she turned around, sort of looked, not quite looked me straight in the eyes, but sort of looked, gave me a side eye and looked up at her mom. And she said, I'm so glad we're here for the puppy. And I was very, you know, was trying very hard to just be chill about the whole thing because she's little and, you know. And sure enough, she got the puppy. And so we got inside and the lady says, you know, hi, can I help you? And I'm just ugly crying, grown person, just, I'm here for a dog, please. And she said, we don't have any dogs left. So I sort of, my New York came out and I leaned across the counter and I said, look, lady, I'm not leaving here without a dog. So you find me a dog. And I don't think she wanted to let a dog come home with me. And when I think about it, I sort of understand why. And she said, well, we have this one dog left. She's been at the shelter for months. Nobody wants her. She's not very sociable. She was really underselling Victoria, right? She said she's got diarrhea. She's not fixed. So she's an estrus. She's bleeding. So you'll need diapers and pads all over the house. She has a grade 2 heart murmur. She's not very friendly. She was used in a pit bull fighting ring as a breeding dog. She was dumped after her pups were taken from her. We found her, you know, we had known of this ring or whatever. We found her wandering the streets one day and we picked her up and she's probably within a couple days of being euthanized. And I said, great, I'll take her. And they looked at me and they were like, are you sure? And I said, yeah, just box her up. I'll take her. It's fine. So they take us out in the meet and greet yard. Her name was Pepsi. At the time, I looked at my partner and I was like, "This, what kind of airport daytime stripper name is this that they gave to this poor dog? This is a horrible, horrible name." So we just we went out into the little meet and greet yard, and my partner sitting behind me on the bench, looking very worried, and out trots this, when I tell you, mangy, dirty, disgusting, paws covered in sores, patches of fur missing, and slightly, this dog looked happy and hopeful, but a little tired of being happy and hopeful. It was like, all right, I'll put on the dog and pony show and go out and maybe they'll take me. Likelihood is they won't take me, whatever, I don't care, right? Very self-preservation. And she looks me dead in the face, and the first thing she does is diarrhea. I think she was testing me, and she trots over to me and starts licking my face, and I turn to my partner and I went, "Yes!" And he goes, "No." And I won. Too bad. Victoria and I won. So that's how we met. I've always been an underdog. In my own life, I've always been the one that was never picked for dodgeball, picked last in PE, right? I was always the one that was sort of overlooked to the side. And that's fine now, but as a kid, it was awful. And I knew what that was like. For me, the bigger thing was not, it wasn't so much like, oh, is she the one? It was like, she needs care. There was some sort of spirit about her. And I didn't know until we were in the car going home, and about two blocks away from where we live. And we, like I said, we lived far away from the shelter. She started barking, and she got up and she knew where we were. She knew where we were going. She looked out the side of the window that the house was on. She knew where we were going, and we let her out of the back. And I opened the gate and she ran. We live in a row of in a gated townhome thing. And she ran all the way back to our door. And that's when I realized I didn't have a choice. That puppy was not supposed to be ours. This dog is supposed to be ours. A few weeks, I don't know, a couple weeks after we got her, for some reason she would frequent my son's bedroom a lot. My son, who has never slept in that bedroom ever, has never even seen it. And she would just lie there and just sort of put her head and her chin on her paws. And she would, these heavy sighs. And I would come in and lie on the floor with her. And one day we were lying down together, sort of, she would roll over and I would rub her belly and we'd stare up at the ceiling. And she looked at me, she sort of turned her head and she looked at me, and I realized what was happening. She knew. She knew that he wasn't here. And she knew that that room had something in it that was so painful and so sacred. And she, obviously she doesn't speak English. But there was a very clear communication at that moment. And all of a sudden, when I realized that she knew, and I knew that she knew that I knew that she knew, I looked at her and I said, "Oh my gosh, we're the same." She had her puppers taken and sort of dumped out, was looking for a new lease on life, had so much love to give. So much love to give. And she wanted to be a mama. And I wanted to be a mama. And in some weird ways, although my mother is still living, thank goodness, but Victoria and I sort of mothered each other. And so we started this thing. I say we started like she's, you know, some sort of voting member of this, but we did. We started this thing that we called the Mama Mama Club. And every time I would say, "Mama, Mama Club meeting," she would come running over and we'd sit together and we'd put our noses together and say, "Okay, we're going to have a meeting." I don't know. It was really cool. That's all I can say. You know, because we were told that she had this grade 2 heart murmur. She was supposed to be a, quote, Netflix and chill dog, which she, by the way, was not a Netflix and chill dog at all. She and I would go for 2 and 3 hour walks and runs. I mean, this fool would go in a straight line and never look back if she could. Every squirrel was a squirrel for the taking. Every pigeon was a pigeon for the fighting. Every tree was a tree for the sniffing and the peeing. Every rose bush, every cactus, everything was exploration for her. And it got me up and about, and it got me up and about in a way that also my doctor was really pleased, because I was sort of, for a while, it was sort of take it easy and, you know, no stress, don't stress your body, don't stress your mind. And then pretty soon I said, I'm ready to kind of go back to life. And I decided that at a certain time, when we were walking, I would just turn my phone on do not disturb. I thought, this is my time with her. I'm not going to be scrolling on my phone when we're, I'm not going to be listening, you know, just, it's just me and her, and we're out doing what we do. We had to start making various adjustments as we went along, because her health, she didn't just have a grade 2 heart murmur. She had a lot more. And so fairly quickly, we had to do a complete 180 of our lives to make some major adjustments to ensure that Victoria got care that she needed. She had congestive heart failure and a whole host of other things, trail offs of these conditions, and just you name it, she had it. All of this got discovered after she had a very severe case of pyometra and had to go in for a hysterectomy, because she almost died. And that's when they found all of these other conditions. And I said, well, what about the, you know, what about the grade 2 heart murmur? And they said, yeah, that's the least of your worries. We recently, my husband and I tallied up the medical bills, and we probably could have purchased 2 cars for that amount. 100% worth it, without a doubt. At the risk of sounding hippy dippy or whatever, we're big believers that the universe gives us what is appropriate at that moment. And it was very clear that she was there to remind us that we had love and care and compassion to give, and that time is something that we can take, and time is something that we can choose how we spend it. And we spent it on her.
Tell me how she was worth it. What did she do for you? How did she save your life?
I think the biggest way that she saved my life was I'm gonna cry now. She let me be a mother. I had in an effort to survive the litigation and the custody battle, I had shut off a part of myself. And especially after the stroke, leading up to the stroke, and then probably after the stroke, I had really ignored and muted this part of myself, because it was the only way to keep going and keep functioning as a sort of a positive and contributing member of society. And I didn't resort to drugs. I didn't resort to drinking, right? I didn't do any self-harm, nothing like that. I also was not afforded the opportunity to perhaps go to therapy, because of the way that therapy had been weaponized in the litigation. And so I realized that any move that I made was going to be one that was flipped, or could be flipped, including when I told my doctor, hey, I got a dog and this, that, and the other. And, you know, and I said, I want an ESA certificate for her. And she said, nope, because as you go forward in the appeal, everybody that knew what was going on knew, like, if I got an ESA certificate, somebody somewhere in the opposition would find a way to see, she needs emotional support. See, she's weak. See, she's, I mean, they would find it, because they had done it before. If you have a 100% track record of using stuff against somebody, why would you not use that? Right. So, the biggest thing that Victoria did for me was she did allow me to be a mother, and not just a mother. I think she really allowed me to be a great mother. She allowed me to be the mother that I knew that I am, and that I was, and that was attempted to be taken from me. And And she did that, believe it or not, through all of her illness and her conditions and all of these things, because I was constantly shifting things around and putting her first, and every spare dime went to Victoria's healthcare. And I didn't realize that all, like, little tiny things like that were things that I had willingly just given up, just happily given up, because it's like, oh, well, it's roses or an abdominocentesis. Well, we're going for the abdomino, right? Like, that's it. And so she gave me that chance. And through that, she helped me realize that that's something that, try as people might to take that away, try as they might to unring that bell and to rewrite a different truth, there are some things that are inherently universal truths. And one of those universal truths happens to be, and I tell my friends that have lost, that have had, unfortunately, children pass away, once you are a mother, you are a mother. Nobody can take that. A court can try to absolve your custodial and your parental rights. Doesn't matter. I mean, it legally matters, but you will always have birthed that child. There's no way for them to, at the risk of sounding a little bit graphic, like, they can't put it back in, right? So that will always be there. And that was something that I needed to feel and learn for myself. Victoria had this innate, I don't know how to describe it. She had this innate ability, the sixth, seventh, and eighth sense that she had, because she was always extra, to find these things that I think a lot of people would consider to be miraculous observations or miraculous happenings. I don't know how to describe it. She would oftentimes pull me in a different direction. One of the things that I know is what you focus on grows, and what you give your attention to amplifies. And so I started meditating and taking time, and I started asking questions, open-ended questions, to see if this would work. And I would often ask things like, I would like a sign that is so unique and so outlandishly bizarre that there's no other explanation for it, right? I would like to see that this is working. I would start testing this. And we'd go out on our walks, and she would start pulling me in different directions. Because we used to just do a walk that was our usual-ish route. And then one day, she started pulling me in a different direction. And I was like, no, come on, we're not going there. We're going back. And she was growling. I mean, we were going this way if it was the last thing we did. And she pulled me over to this tree. And under this tree was a full-sized Bible. And then I thought, okay, well, let me ask another question. All right, that's a coincidence. Let's find something, you know, give me another sign that something happens. And then about a week later, she's pulling me in a different direction. And there's another Bible from another church in a completely different place. And then I said, all right, look, people can, they might leave it somewhere. They don't want it anymore. Maybe they drop it. I mean, I'm sort of trying to logic skeptic myself out of this. I said, okay. All right, let's try this again. Now I want to know that, you know, you, whoever you up there is, I want to know that you up there, and I sort of pointed randomly to up at the sky. I was like, I want to know that you are, you know, that you're doing this. So we're walking again. She pulls me in this completely different direction. And I go, and there's nothing there. And I said, ha ha, I knew this was a coincidence. I knew this was, you know. And then she pulled me again. And then again, and then again. And sort of we made this like little weird square, and then back to the spot where there was nothing. And maybe literally 10 minutes later, there was face up a tarot card, the sun, you know, the sun tarot card, face up, staring at me. And I looked at her, and she's sitting there panting, looking quite pleased with herself. She's like, see, I told ya. what? I told ya. But she always, and this happened more times than I can count. I mean, one time I had asked the question, I said, you know, I'd like to find a way to play more music during COVID-19 because going out and touring was not an option. So my best girlfriend, the one that sent me your podcast, as a matter of fact, she and I were walking and Victoria pulls us down the street that we never go on. And we have no idea. This is a side street. So we don't even know if it leads back out to the main thoroughfare. And on the sidewalk is a fully working upright piano, which now, by the way, is in my garage because we started this whole video series called the Garage Piano Series. And that's what we did during COVID. The other thing is that she outran death eight times in 3 years, I think, just about. She kept having these ventricular tachycardia attacks where her heart rate would soar to about 330 beats per minute. And this was something that our cardiologist weighed in on with some other experts. And he said, look, we have a protocol for what happens if the dogs code. We don't have a protocol for when they sustain VTAC at that level for 24 to 36 hours and their blood pressure tanks, but they're still standing up and walking around. Your dog is technically medically dead, but she's very clearly alive and eating snacks. We don't know what to do because this doesn't happen. I mean, it's happened a couple of times, right? But it's not something that is, you don't go to the medical books for that. That's like a very, very rare thing. And they just, especially the cardiologist, Dr. Forney, who deserves a lot of credit. He just said to me one day, he said, look, for all things medical and all things cardiac, the truth is just she wants to live with you. They expected her, I'm trying to think, she had the pyometra in March or April of 2020, right after we got her. And then she had her first VTAC shortly after that. And then it just sort of, every few months, like it would be like, oh, it's time for her quarterly critical care, you know, let's go to the hospital and maybe she's going to clunk it this time. And so we got a phone call from the head of our hospital, and she had her day off, but I was like, I got to save Victoria and this, that, and the other. And she called me up and she said, listen, she goes, you have to understand that with VTAC patients and chronic heart patients, sudden death is looming at any time. I mean, she could just get up too fast and die. So every day that you have her is a good day to have her. And she said, I don't know how long you have. She said, given Victoria's fighting spirit, she goes, I think you have probably more than weeks. I think you probably have months, right? But I don't think you have years. I think you probably have months. And I said, okay. And that was 2.5 years ago. I didn't do anything for 2.5 years after we initially realized that we were dealing with this, I think, terminal cardiac patient, right? In that sense. I didn't do anything. Even when sort of the world opened up and we could start touring again and we could start playing live and stuff, I didn't take any tours. The few performances that I took were very short. They were very local. I tried to get weird afternoon performances, which isn't really a thing in my industry. and so I actually pivoted my life to doing film scoring and TV scoring, and then doing documentary production and things that I could do mostly from home or things that I could take her to. Everything that we did, it was like, if you get me, Victoria's part of the package. And if you don't want Victoria, then you don't get me, right? If we were going into the studio, it's like, oh, Victoria's coming. All right, clear this section out over here.
When she had to meet people, did she become okay with that?
Oh my goodness. She loved people, Like, I think she understood that the people that ditched her were just really bad people and that the rest of the world wasn't like that. She truly thought she was a person. I think she thought she was just a funny looking human. We only had her for 3.5 years. I'm very grateful that we had her for more than half her life. Not much more, but more that we were able to give her more than 50% of her life as quality, to me, is really, really important. And we made a deal. I said, I will never, I used to say, I won't shove you ahead of anybody in line, meaning, you know, I won't put you down. I said, but you got to hang on until I'm ready to be okay doing stuff on my own, right? That was the deal that we made. And so I told her, I said, you're going to have to give me a pretty big sign when you're ready to go, because mama's one half of the mama club, and I'm gonna need to know, like, in pretty big neon lights here. And so she gave us a sign the morning of August 1st. She went into VTAC, and we thought it was just a minor thing. But then we realized it wasn't so minor. We brought her into the critical care hospital, and they said, we'll shoot her up with lidocaine. It's fairly, like, mid-level. She should convert back to normal within an hour or two. Just stay put. The doctor comes back in about 5 minutes, sweating bullets, and she goes, her heart stopped. She coded. And I mean, my legs gave out. My legs just gave out. And I said, okay. And I had lightning speed, like, gone into crisis mode, and, like, in my head I was like, okay, she's gonna pass away, it's okay, we talked about this is her sign, I'm here for the, like, I can do this, it's okay. And the doctor goes, we're gonna bring her back. And I was like, what? And they said, yeah, you signed an order the last time you were here for CPR and chest compressions, so we're defibrillating and we've started chest compressions. So they brought her back, which was insane. And sometimes with animals with CPR, they come back differently. And so we saw her, and she was on oxygen. And when her cardiologist came in toward the end of the day, he came in around 4 or 4:30 that afternoon. And I said, is there anything we can do? Because the ER attendings are telling us these are options, but there's a 5% chance of her surviving that. And if she survives it, there's a 5% chance within the 5% chance of her making it home. And if she survives that, then there's a 5% within five, you know, right? Like, the percentages just get smaller and smaller. And he looked at me and he said, I don't know what to say, because she's always outrun it. She's always outrun it. So he said, I can't medically tell you that there's nothing we can do. I cannot, however, tell you that there is something we can do. He said, I do not know the answer to this. And he said, I think that her coding was her sign, right? That was her sign. And I said, yeah, fair enough. But they brought her back. He said, okay, well, that's done. We got to, you know, move from there. So the nurse tech came in and said, well, we can give her just like they do with human beings, we can give her a very strong sedative because her body is shutting down naturally. It just is. So she said, we can give a strong sedative just like we do for humans. And it doesn't stop the heart. There's nothing like that. It's just something that helps you relax. And then it allows the body the time to do what it needs to do without, you know, hopefully without pain and without discomfort. And I said, okay. And so they moved us from the waiting room to this, like, triage room. And they brought her in. They said, we're going to have her be with you. And she was able to, it's funny, I think about this now and I sort of chuckle because I realize what she was doing, which was she was someone who really did not like to leave things unfinished. She would always, like, finish her water bowl, finish her food. She would always finish chewing up a toy completely. I mean, everything was from start to finish. And so, we were making phone calls and putting people on speakerphone for her. And I think she was not going to go. She was going to hang on until she got to talk to whoever her people were, right? All of her people that she wanted to talk to. So I was like in my head making these lists going, all right, I got to call my dad. I got to call this. I got to, right, going through this list. And I was on the phone with somebody and her heart started beating through her blanket. Like I could see it and I thought, this is really weird. It's been 4 hours, 5 hours maybe at that time. And the sedative's supposed to be slowing stuff down. And I looked at her and I put my hand under the blanket and I felt this punch, like this, I mean, really hard kapow into my hand. And that was her last heartbeat. My husband and I walked out of the critical care hospital and the sky was black. It wasn't raining. It was just black. And we opened the door and we stood there in the parking lot and this giant flash of lightning came down. And I looked at him and he was like, yep, that's her. She was so, so dramatic. She was always like this very, I don't know, just like those old 1920s, you know, stage actresses and silent movie actresses. And she, everything about her was such drama. And even her transition and her departure was like exit stage left, but house lights down, spotlight on, curtain fall, right? Roses, everything was orchestrated for her. And I don't know how she did it, but she did it. She always showed up for me. She always showed up for my husband. She always showed up for anybody that needed her. She was not, didn't matter how many pokes or prods or heart things she had. It didn't matter. She always got up and showed up for us. So I have to do that for her. I have to do that in her name, in her spirit to keep that going because, you know, otherwise it's all in vain, isn't it? Pre-COVID, when I was able to spend some time with my son and he was younger, he would have a rough time with something or, you know, have a fight with friends or whatever. Say, well, come into the nest and let's talk about it. And I would sit on the floor and I would make a diamond shape with my legs, right? And put the soles of my feet together. And he would crawl in there and we would just sort of sit. I would hold him and I would say, now you tell mama what's wrong and I'm going to listen and, you know, let's talk about this and let's sort of work this through. And he got to this place where he'd say, mama, make a nest. And that was his way of saying, hey, I got to talk to you. And so, Victoria started sitting in the nest and she sort of inherently knew when I was just sitting like that, she would come in and sit and she'd sort of look at me and she'd put her head on my shoulder and sort of dig her chin, bony chin into my shoulder and, you know, sort of snarf at me. And so that was one really sweet, sweet thing. The thing that is my husband does not miss that I actually do miss, which is really, it's something that only a mother could love is, she would save her most disgusting farts for me and she would just come right up to me and just let loose. And I was perfectly fine with it. I was perfectly fine with it. And my husband would go, I gotta leave the room. This is disgusting. Or we'd be in the car driving either to Vegas or back to LA. He's like, Victoria! And he'd roll the window down and, you know, she'd look at me and I'd be like, I don't know. I love you, honey. I love you. Mama loves you. And she'd be in the back, you know, very pleased with herself.
If Victoria were here in front of us right now, if she were right next to you and you knew she understood human English, what would you like to say to her?
Let's go. Let's do it. Whatever it is, let's do it. Let's go. We got stuff to do. Let's go get it done. Because that's how she was. It was a let's go kind of every day was a let's go kind of day.